Monday. Tuesday. Wednesday. Thursday. Friday. Saturday. Sunday.
This is an urgent message to people of European descent. Due to mass immigration into white nations, and within five generations, whites will make up only 0.9% of the world's population, thus facing extinction. The ever-decreasing white population in America will be forced northwards and will soon dwindle to a minority. Europe is an ancestral continent of all whites. As these white nations begin to have mass immigration, Muslim and otherwise, Europeans are being compelled out of their continent of origin. Recent statistics show that Sweden will be a majority non-white country in 2050, and fellow Scandinavian countries will follow and are following this same path.
We have 1,000 pupils in a Swedish school.
Yeah.
How many are Swedes?
Two.
In 2015, 65% of all babies born in Germany will be of Arabic descent. All white nations have massive third world immigration, and due to this, the quality of life is on the decline. Well, maybe you don't care right now, but what will life be like for those whites who are now becoming the minority? Let's look at a nation where whites are presently a minority for an answer.
No one was ever arrested. An old man's hand resting on the arm of his wife of many years. She raped, police say, probably while he was forced to watch. Finally, with their throats slit, they died next to each other. In a macabre display, the killers left their Bibles displayed on the bodies. In an outside room, a third member of the family was tied up with wire, then tortured and killed. Scenes like these are difficult to forget. There is also another motive.
There is a motive of hatred, that these are hate crimes, that people are tortured, that they're murdered in ways that are dehumanizing.
Not only does Stanton believe farm murders are hate crimes, but he has also recently warned the world that the white farmers in South Africa could be facing genocide. A scene like this, he says, should have the alarm bells ringing. This farmer was ambushed at his farm gate. A teenage boy crying out for his mother.
My mommy!
Overwhelmed by emotion, a family member faints at the graveside. In just 7 days, South African farming communities have buried yet another three victims of murder.
We are going to exterminate white people, because that, in my estimation, is the only conclusion I have come to. We have to exterminate white people off of the face of the planet to solve this problem.
Thank you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is I, Peter Schenck. Let's party. Have a little rave going on here. Oh, yeah. Can you feel the beat? Oh, boy. Okay, thank you. That felt pretty good, huh? Not. It's Wednesday, June 11th, 2008, and this is Schenck Talk Worldwide. I'm your host, Peter Schenck, and we are broadcasting worldwide courtesy of the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network. The beginning segment, we were listening to a little documentary or a little piece off of YouTube discussing the diminishing numbers, the disintegration of the white race. It is happening, folks. And I know a lot of you out there don't care. It's not really a big deal because there's plenty of people to have sex with. It doesn't matter if they're white or black or Hispanic or whatever you're into. And in the very near future, we'll even be having sex with animals because it won't matter. It's just a way to get an orgasm. And of course, according to Freud, that's the secret of happiness in life is to have a regular orgasm several times a day. And this is the way people conduct their lives today. This is the center of their life, the centerpiece. This is their identity if they're going to get laid tonight. Or their identity is the fact that they're homosexual. I'm a homosexual. I have to let everyone know so I can just be me. This is the sum total of many people, of many persons' existence, of many people's existence, rather. This is the sum total. This is what they believe they're about. It's all about their sexuality. And this is something that Freud came up with and put forth, and Eddie Bernays, his nephew, made it part of the popular consciousness of the West. Orgasm, sex, this is what life's all about. It's not about God. It's not about doing the right thing. It's about getting off. It's about being happy. And happiness is directly tied to one's orgasm. And this is what we are dealing with today. So most of you don't care about the fact that your race is diminishing, that white people will not exist, well, very few of us will exist in possibly 100 years. But it doesn't matter because race doesn't mean anything. And I submit to you a simple mental exercise. We were discussing Charles Lindbergh yesterday and my idea that Charles Lindbergh deserved a national holiday, not Martin Luther King. And I also submit to you that you do this little mental exercise and then decide for yourselves if race doesn't matter. Would we be better off if this country was full of Charles Lindberghs, people of his ilk? Or would we be better off if this country was full of people like Martin Luther King and people of his ilk? Because the problems we're having today stem from the fact that our country venerates people like Martin Luther King and despises people like Charles Lindbergh. And this is to our detriment. Now, you do the math on that one. A country full of Charles Lindberghs or a country full of Martin Luther Kings, which country would succeed? Which country would prosper? Which country would rise to the top and create a wonderful future for its inhabitants? Do the math on that one. And then tell me, race doesn't matter. Now, I don't bring this up because I dislike non-whites or I dislike Jews. I don't. Uh-oh. Now the truth is out. No, I don't. I grew up in Los Angeles. I went to school with every type of person you can imagine. And I made friends with all sorts of people. I think Jews are very funny. I think a lot of them are very clever and intelligent, and I enjoy their conversation from time to time. And I would say that I've even had Jewish friends. I like black people. I think they're very funny and clever, and I've worked with black people before and in my musical endeavors, and Hispanics as well. I like all of them. I think there are good people in all those races. But I love my family. I love my race. I love my culture. And while I like these people and I enjoy them from time to time as company, I certainly don't want to marry their daughters. I don't want them to marry my daughters. I don't want them to run my country. I don't want them to have the controls, the levers that operate my society, my culture, my country, my government. They're nice people, but they have no business running this country. And I don't believe that they feel any differently towards me. They might like me, but I'm not their family. I'm not of their race or their culture. And when the fecal matter hits the fan, who do you think they're going to support? They're going to support their white friend, or they're going to support their family, their race, and their culture? What do you think is going to happen at that point? And that's what we're talking about here. It's not an all or nothing zero sum game. You can deal with people on every level, and you can have friendships and acquaintances and business relations, but would you equate that with your own family? Who comes first in your life? What is your number one priority? Your friends or your family? And that's the issue here. I don't rail against world Zionism and the non-whites because I hate them or I dislike them. I don't like their organizations. I don't like the groups they belong to. I don't like their political bent. But on an individual level, I know many fine people that are of all those different races and creeds and colors and so on and so forth. But that doesn't change anything. It doesn't change the fact that I'm a white man. It doesn't change the fact that I love my family, and I will protect my family and my family's self-interest over everyone else. And that goes for my race, because race is an extension of my family. You can't have one without the other. Family is not some kind of governmental construct. Family is about the blood. Family is a man and a woman getting together and having children, raising those children, so on and so forth. And those people belong to a larger family, which is known as your race and your culture. So I see no contradiction in my beliefs with regards to non-whites and Jews. I wish them well. Just don't try to harm my family and my cherished institutions and my race. Just don't do it. If you do it, then all bets are off and the game changes, doesn't it? This is what we are talking about. It is not using hate, not being a complete brute, an ignoramus. I hate all black people. I hate the Jews. I hate that. That doesn't get you anywhere. That's what they want you to do. That's what the Jews are doing to the white race. They are pitting whites against the non-whites. That's how they're doing it. You don't have to support these organizations that are anti-white. You don't have to be scared of promoting your own racial self-interest. But you don't have to hate or be violent or let the enemy use your violence or the enemy use your hate as a weapon to be used against your own people. And this is what we are witnessing today. It even is happening today within Christianity. I see so many people on the internet, and even on the Voice of Reason blog, just sniping at each other with regards to the different sects of Christianity that they belong to. And this is exactly what Jews want you to do. They want you to attack each other's group. There's only one Christian sect in the world right now that is responsible for promoting world Zionism. And that sect was created back in the 60s during the counter-revolution, the cultural revolution of the 1960s, the counter-culture revolution. And it began with a group of people down in Hollywood known as Tony and Susan Alamo. And they started a little group of born-again Christians. They were going around picking up runaways and hippies off the street, putting them in their bus and taking them up to the hills out in the outskirts of L.A. where they ran a commune. And it was a big scam is what it was. But from this movement, we have seen the popularity of these evangelical cults that have turned into these multi-million dollar organizations courtesy of the Jewish media. Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, people like that would not be popular today. Hagee, John Hagee, if it weren't for the Jewish media. They created those organizations for one purpose: to attract Christians, especially Bible Belt Southerners, to those organizations so they could convince them that if they were good Christians, they would indeed support the State of Israel at all costs. Because it was foretold in the book of Revelations that this prophecy had to come to be if the second coming of Christ was ever going to happen. So people like Hagee came up with the idea that we have to support Israel and support the idea of this abomination to God is what it is, if you believe in the Bible. Whether you're Jewish or Christian, this is an abomination because it's blasphemy. But yet, these organizations were promoted by the Jewish media to offer a buffer to the other Christian organizations that were railing against Israel. And then they became the number one organization in the United States, these evangelical groups, this moral majority, which was led by Ralph Reed for a while. Now Ralph Reed is what? Ralph Reed is now a neocon and a Republican strategist. So no surprise there. This has all been stage managed and arranged to pit Christian against Christian, where all of the true Christians should be very angry with any Christian group that supports the State of Israel the way John Hagee does. And yet, all we hear about is how the Catholics did this, and the Protestants did this, and this, that, and the other, and the Calvinists, and blah, blah, blah. And all you're doing, my friends, all you're doing is what the Jews want you to do. They hate Christianity. They want to see it wiped off the earth. They want to see the memory of Jesus destroyed and wiped off the earth. This is their goal. It's been their goal for over 1,000 years. They've never let it go. The fact that Jesus made them look bad, that he destroyed the status quo, and they've been attacking Jesus and Christianity ever since, through their religious writings, through their occult science, and using Gentile front groups, to infiltrate the host nation, infiltrate the various institutions, and gain power and control over the culture, the technology, and the various trusted institutions in order to spread disinformation, to wreak havoc throughout the land. This is what they've been doing, and they've been doing it very successfully. But they never reached the success that they attained in the 19th century. At that point, using the modern technology that was available, they were essentially handed the megaphone of the world. They were handed the megaphone of the world, which is to say, they got control of the mass media, whether it was television, radio, all of the burgeoning technologies of that era. They got control of these inventions, which they did not invent, but they got control of the finished product, and they used it to their own ends. They used it to create their own version of the world, their own version of reality. This is where the war of perception began. Now, Jews have always been plotting and planning this revenge against the what they refer to as the Roman order. But they never had the means until around the 19th century, when they were given the world's megaphone, radio, and then television, motion pictures. This is what they use to basically revise history. They call these great intellectuals, these historians that are truly interested in history and discussing the facts around certain historical events, they call them revisionists now. And revisionist is a pejorative. It's an insult. And yet, the Jews are the revisionists. They are the ones using the technology, using the megaphone of the world. They created their own version of history, of American history, European history, the history of Christianity, the history of Rome, the history of Western civilization. Most of you out there know what you know about history primarily from watching movies and television. And that's the fact. Or at least 50% of the information you have regarding history, you've learned that from watching movies and television, not reading books. And on top of that, the books that were written 100 years ago, many of them aren't even in print any longer. So all you can obtain today is a book written by a Jew maybe 10 years ago. You can't find any older books that were written by historians that were really concerned about history and writing and documenting the truth. But today we have a lot of Jewish historians revising history into a politically correct narrative. This is historical revisionism, not what the people are doing at IHR. They're telling the truth. They're telling you, they're presenting the facts surrounding a number of historical events, whereas the Jews have revised history into a politically correct narrative. And unfortunately, most of you have your information regarding history primarily from the movies that you watched as a child or as a young adult. This is the sad part, but this is how the Jews waged the war of perception. And unfortunately, most of you have fallen for it. But that's what we're trying to do here on Shank Talk Worldwide, is wake you up, point out these techniques, tactics, and strategies so you won't fall into the trap ever again. And you can warn others about it. This is Shank Talk Worldwide. I'm your host, Peter Shank. I will be right back after a brief intermission break. You are listening to the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network. Don't go away. Sky!
By the fall election, I think before that.
Howard Dean's confidence notwithstanding, there are deep questions among Democrats about whether Barack Obama will be able to count on Hillary Clinton's camp come the fall, especially if she's not his VP choice.
I'm going to go my own way. I'm not sure I'm going to follow her to Obama. I need to think about it.
Adding to the tension, a list of conservative Democratic superdelegates who say they won't endorse the Illinois senator and won't go to this summer's convention in Denver. Now, party officials, including some staunch Clinton supporters, are scrambling to prevent her base from jumping ship.
I understand. We all worked hard. It takes a little while. You have to take a deep breath. But the reality is, there is no doubt in my mind that there is such a clear difference and so much at stake for our country that people are going to rally around Senator Barack Obama.
Thank you again.
If they don't, John McCain appears to be waiting with open arms.
I will attract independents, Democrats. By the way, those supporters of Senator Clinton, I welcome you here today. But so
some Democrats may feel a closer affinity to McCain because they feel Clinton has had a good relationship with McCain in the past. A blog on McCain's website has even posted a picture of the two together in the Arctic during a trip with the Senate Armed Services Committee.
The way to continue.
Many insiders took notice of Clinton's lack of attack or even mention of McCain during her concession speech. But polling experts say it's really too early to tell if there will be defections.
I think you have to wait for the dust to settle on the primaries. Early indications are that there's a Gallup poll out this week suggesting that some women at least are coming around to Obama in spite of the feelings that Clinton may have gotten a raw deal because of her gender. We'll see what happens with that.
On the streets of New York City, some Clinton supporters think issues of race and sex are really what's at stake in the end.
People that could not see a black president, racist people, would now switch to McCain.
But it would have been an interesting mark in history to have had her win. I think she was worthy of the office.
Now the question is, who do they really think is worthy now? Ed Donahue, The Associated Press.
right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. It is I, Peter Schenck, once again. Yes, and Obama, well, he's doing exactly what his little controllers want him to do. He has polarized the opposition. He's polarized the Democratic Party. Let's get some more information about Mr. Obama here, huh? Another little news tidbit, very quickly.
Obama's vice presidential research team is resigning amid criticism of his personal loan deals. Obama says Jim Johnson is stepping down to avoid being a distraction. Johnson is a former CEO of Fannie Mae. He received loans from Countrywide Financial, which is part of a federal investigation into the subprime mortgage crisis. Johnson served on the vetting team along with former Deputy Attorney General Eric Holder and former first daughter Caroline Kennedy.
I mean, his job is equivalent to someone who's running a small business who has somebody on their staff who goes through all the resumes, picks out three that look the best, sets up the meeting for the three to come in for the head of the company to meet. That's basically all Jim Johnson's doing.
Johnson and Holder created a stir when they showed up on Capitol Hill this week to consult with Democratic Party leaders. Obama's campaign is keeping mum about who they're considering for the number two spot, but sources say they have a list of about 20 people, including some retired military generals.
We'll see these floated up for different reasons. This one is probably to let people know that he's taken this seriously enough. He realizes he's weak on foreign policy, and he's looking at a general. Doesn't mean he'll pick a general, but big surprise, there may be a military person who makes the shortlist.
Republican John McCain has a head start in the Veep stakes. His informal team of vetters has also come under criticism for connections to lobbyists. McCain spent Memorial Day weekend with four potential running mates: Florida Governor Charlie Crist, Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal, former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, and Kansas Senator Sam Brownback. While both camps are weighing their options, it's unlikely that their decisions are imminent.
You know, McCain's only been looking for a few weeks, and Barack Obama's only been looking for a few days, and this is a really methodical process you have to go through.
Fournier says it's possible the candidates will wait until closer to the party conventions to announce their running mates. Ed Donahue, The Associated.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, well, there you go. There you have it. All right. Well, that's all the news that's fit to print. Obama is now thinking about a VP. Do you think he'll take Hillary, or do you think he'll go in a different direction? Now, I've given you my theory. I'll repeat it. I don't believe, and, you know, there's always room for error here, but I don't believe, in my educated opinion, that Obama will pick Hillary. I don't believe Hillary will accept, simply because I think she knows without her at the head of the ticket, it's a losing proposition. And Hillary wants to be president, not vice president, president. And she knows if she jumps on this ship and it sinks, goodbye political career. So, this is the interesting scenario. It's like playing chess. You have to move, or at least plan your moves, at least 10 moves in advance. And the technique that Eddie Bernays created was a very interesting one. His technique was to not convince people to buy products or join political movements that he was supporting or promoting. What he developed was an idea and a tactic to create an environment that compelled you to do what he wanted you to do. Whether it was smoking a certain cigarette or eating bacon or supporting various women's lib groups or black civil rights groups, whatever the program, if it was going to joining the armed services to fight in World War One and Two, this was something Eddie Bernays developed, and that was to create an environment that would compel people to do exactly what he wanted them to do. And this is what's happening, in my opinion, what we're seeing today. The environment that has been created is one that Hillary will not get on board with. She knows if she has a bit of a brain, and if she's as savvy as a politician as she's supposed to be, she knows that if she jumps on this ship, she's going to sink, and so will her career and all of her aspirations to be president. So I don't believe she will join the ticket, and if she doesn't join the ticket, all of her supporters will move over to McCain. And this is what the Jews want to see, because McCain is going to give them their 100-year war and is going to fulfill their goals as stated in the document Clean Break. That is to secure the realm for Israel using America's military might. This is what the Jews want, and this is what McCain's going to give them. So McCain is their boy. When McCain tells you, I'm going to attract independents, Democrats, supporters of Hillary, he knows he is, because the Jews have given it to him. The Jews are not going to vote for a guy with the name Barack Obama. It's just not going to happen. And all those Jews that have influence with the major media are going to vote for McCain, because they're not going to vote for Barack Obama either. This is the environment that was created by picking a man with such a shady past as Barack Obama, with such limited political history, rather limited political experience. This was why they picked him. They picked him for this reason. And it's just one story after another. He has one of his campaign representatives that are polling for vice presidential nominees. He ends up getting canned because he's a crook. And this is what you're going to see through the whole campaign. One person after the other falling to the wayside because of some criminal background or criminal activity they're engaged in. This is going to be the constant theme with the Barack Obama campaign, and I don't think Hillary Clinton is going to want to be associated with it. But this is what they want. And the most beautiful thing about it is that it's like winning the Daily Double. They're going to get their war in Iran, courtesy of John McCain and the neocons, and they're going to create more racial strife in this country when Obama loses, because the Jewish media is promoting him as hope, almost like he's a pseudo-religious figure. And when he loses, every newspaper, every periodical, every television show is going to declare he lost because white people are racist. America is racist and wouldn't elect a black man. Just like the young lady that was interviewed in the news article just a minute ago. She said, well, McCain will attract all the whites that are racist. Exactly. And all the women that feel Hillary was kicked out of the running or wasn't allowed to take her place as a number one Democrat. Those women that feel Hillary was basically cast to the wayside because of her sex, those women will vote for McCain. And all the Jews that know of Barack Obama's association with Louis Farrakhan and his pronunciations or his speeches that he's made in the past regarding going over to Iran and the various so-called terrorist states, saying that he would negotiate with these people. That's not going to sit well with the Jewish community in Florida or New York or L.A. or Chicago or Austin. And those people, for the most part, are very influential people in their community. They run important businesses, networks, media conglomerates, local radio stations. This is all run by Jews. And they're not going to vote for him. And they're just holding back right now, patiently waiting. And when the campaign gets in a full swing and he starts running against McCain in earnest, right around October, you're going to see all sorts of things that they've dug up about Barack Obama and his past. And they'll attack him and his wife, and they'll bring up every single thing that they've said or written down, and they'll make it public. And all of their anti-white, anti-Jewish statements, and all of their anti-white, anti-Jewish friends will be splashed across the newspaper headlines, will be splashed over your television screens. And you're going to see John McCain win a landslide. A man that is a swine. He can barely put little words together to make a sentence. But it'll be a landslide because he got the nod. The guy with the little yarmulke took it off and waved it, says, "You're the man." And he threw the yarmulke to John McCain. John McCain picked it up, picked up the mantle, so to speak, put it on his head. He's the boy. He's the boy. And you take my word for it. He's going to win. We'll be right back. This is Shank Talk Worldwide. I'm your host, Peter Shank, and this is the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network. Dare to know. Don't go away.
The signs are everywhere.
I know. I went to Quiznos yesterday, and I noticed they cut back. They don't use them at the market. I mean, the restaurant and everything like that.
The tomatoes are in season.
We make salsa. We grill the tomatoes with the vegetables. We probably have tomatoes every night in our salad, in a cucumber tomato vinaigrette salad. Literally, probably with every meal, we eat tomatoes.
Yeah. Some are not for consumption.
Right away, you thought about my salsas. You know me. Most of the salsas have tomato.
Diego Fernandez runs several Mexican eateries where the red round fruit reigns king.
The reaction that we took right away was to get rid of all the tomato that we had in-house.
He said to throw away tomatoes that could have salmonella, food poisoning outbreak that's hit 17 states, all connected with raw Roma, plum and red round tomato varieties.
The salmonella could be attaching itself to the supply anywhere in an entire food chain, from the field to the production to the restaurants, the entire food chain. It could be on a truck.
In response, restaurants and grocery stores are pulling them off menus and shelves. Your burger will have to do without for now. Simply washing your tomatoes won't get rid of the bacteria, which may be found inside.
They're in the refrigerator. I recommend that you toss them.
The Food and Drug Administration says imported tomatoes from Mexico may be the culprit. The federal agency has now cleared Florida and California-grown tomatoes for consumption. Though the scare is getting headlines, food experts say don't lose sight of one thing.
The United States has the most stringent monitoring system in the world. It also has the most detailed reporting system in the world.
But the taint of infections, as many tomato growers worrying, our taste for fresh fruit may wane. So the solution for now, use tomatoes from not so far away.
We are going to provide you with a local California tomato.
Which this restaurant proprietor is happy to do, especially with a menu in which close to half includes tomatoes of some kind. John Moe, the Associated Press, Pasadena, California. The signs are everywhere.
I know I went to Quiznos yesterday and I noticed the cutback, you know, using my at the market.
You know, it's incredible. Even in the news story, they've got oh my gosh. Even in the news story, they're plugging McDonald's, Quiznos. It's just unbelievable. You know, and then they don't even put two and two together. It was such a basic thing. Don't eat the vegetables and the fruit in Mexico. Have you ever heard that before? And then what does our government do? Import all of our vegetables and fruit now from Mexico. The number one importer of tomatoes, Mexico. And why? Why do they tell you not to eat the fruit and vegetables and drink the water in Mexico? It's called human fecal matter. Human fecal matter. They use it for fertilizer. They defecate in their own water. And this is also a relative of typhoid. Salmonella is a close relative of typhoid. Remember Typhoid Mary? All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, we're back. This is Shank Talk Worldwide. I'm your host, Peter Shank, and it is a beautiful Wednesday here in Austin, Texas, and it is June 11th, 2008. Well, the story, the interesting story here, is the tomato scare. Once again, as I stated over the break there, growing up in California, we went to Mexico quite a bit. That was like a fun thing to do on the weekends before it got extremely dangerous, like it is today. We would go across the border, but everybody knew to not eat the vegetables or the fruit and to not drink the water. So now we have Mexican vegetables and Mexican fruit coming across the border. It is the place where we get most of our vegetables and fruit now. We get most of our tomatoes from Mexico. And they use human waste to fertilize those crops. They also use sewage water to water the crops. And how do I know this? Because all water in Mexico is sewage water, because they don't differentiate between their drinking water and toilet water, because it all contains human fecal matter, E. coli, salmonella, you name it. It's all in there. And they use that to water their vegetables. And the worst part of this, we never get an answer. Whether it was the E. coli scare about the spinach, whether it was the tomatoes or the tainted cheese that had tuberculosis, we never find out. Where did it come from? How do we prevent it from happening again? Where did it come from? How do we prevent it from happening again? We want to know this. But we never get a straight answer, and it just disappears off the headlines, just like it never even happened. In fact, it disappears off the internet. It's very difficult to find stories that once existed on the internet regarding anything about these food scares and where they really came from. I can tell you, but I can't easily find news reports to read you over the air, but I can tell you exactly where the E. coli came from the spinach, from farm workers defecating in the fields on the spinach in the groundwater. Their fecal matter, their fecal waste, got into the groundwater because they're out there crapping in the fields. And they do this because the corporations that hire them to work out there don't want to give them breaks. Because if they get a break, they don't get paid, so they don't take breaks. When they got to take a dump, they just do it right there. This is where the E. coli came from with regards to the spinach. But you'll never hear this on the news or anywhere else. You'll never see it. It doesn't even exist. It's very difficult to find any articles at all about it. But that's what happened. And with the tomatoes, it's the same thing. It doesn't take a rocket scientist. Why would people tell us back in the 60s, don't eat the vegetables or the fruit or drink the water because it contains human waste and it will get you very, very sick? We used to call it Montezuma's Revenge. We didn't call it E. coli or Salmonella. Montezuma's Revenge, because it's all the same symptoms: diarrhea, headaches, cramps. You feel like you're going to die. I got Montezuma's Revenge a long time ago myself. And believe me, it's not funny. You think you're going to die. I was sick for 3 days, and I really thought I was going to die. I mean, you are literally chained to a toilet. And you start to hallucinate because you're dehydrating, you're sweating, perspiring. And all of the, any of the fluids in your body are now coming out whenever you go to the bathroom, and you're getting dehydrated very rapidly. So I know of what I speak, my friends, from firsthand experience. And I want to know what has changed since the 1960s in Mexico, when they used to tell us, don't drink the water, don't eat the fruit, don't eat the vegetables, because there's human waste that will get you very, very sick and you will get Montezuma's revenge. What has changed since NAFTA, since we opened the borders, since we said, let's start buying our vegetables and produce from Mexico? What has changed? You know what's changed? Nothing. Nothing has changed. They're not under the same scrutiny as the farmers in America. They don't have the same FDA or the Agricultural Committee or whatever organization, the USDA, that monitors these agricultural businesses in America. No, they can do whatever they want to do down there. There are no laws. It's the Wild West. And if farmers want to crap on their vegetables and sell it to Americans, then so be it. They'll do it, because who's going to stop them? Besides just stupid gringos. In fact, bring out little Juanito out there. Let him crap on the vegetables too. Hi, Papi. Great. And then you take that tomato and cut it up for your little kid up here in, you know, Spokane, Washington. Make him a nice tomato sandwich, and he's eating Juanito's little droppings. But that's what's happening. That's the truth. I mean, that is the reality, folks. I can't dress this pig up. It's going to be a little bit disturbing, but that's the beauty of it, because maybe it'll hit home. That's what's going on. We are eating food from Mexico that has been fertilized with crap. And that's what you're eating in restaurants. That's what you're eating at home when you buy the food at the grocery store. And no one is rising up to say, hey, what's going on here? Why are we buying food from a country like Mexico when all of their food and their water is polluted? You don't hear one voice, do you? All right. This is Shank Talk Worldwide. I've got one thing to say to you folks out there. Speak English. We'll be right back. Don't go away. This is the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network, Dare to Know.
Why do law enforcement lie so much? They don't lie so much. They lie all the time. And there's a reason for it. It is because they are lying constantly, because they are giving constantly cover stories to justify the secret agenda's introduction. That's why they're lying all the time.
Welcome back to Rogan Now and Then. I first interviewed my next guest in 1991. Before then, he was best known as a popular BBC sports presenter, but by the time he'd appeared on Wogan, his life had taken a dramatic change. He proclaimed he was the son of the Godhead. He wore turquoise, as he believed, brought him closer to God. Have a look at this.
So evil has been in control of the planet for 12,000 years?
It has been the dominating force. Evil's not the right word. It is imbalance. But it has been increasingly in control, as I repeat. Survey the world, ladies and gentlemen. Is the force of love in control of this world, guiding this planet at this time? Of course not. The negativity, the thoughts that I'm talking about that are very destructive, are pouring out of this planet every day.
Was it a great shock for you to discover this at 38?
Well, I think the word is gobsmacked. But again, you know the best way of removing negativity is to laugh and be joyous. So I'm delighted that there's so much laughter in the audience tonight.
But, no,
just let me say this.
They're laughing at you. They're not laughing with you.
Fine.
I didn't mean that to be hurtful. Sure. I don't want you to misinterpret it. They're not laughing in sympathy with you. So while 15 years ago he was ridiculed for his prophecies about natural disasters around the world, and now he has a controversial new view about who really is running the world. I'm delighted that he's agreed to come back. David Icke.
Thank you, no problem.
Thank you. Now, again, when I see that, I'm slightly embarrassed by it because I thought I was a bit sharp with that comment. So, and at the time I said I didn't mean it to embarrass you. So, that interview at the time, it changed everything for you, didn't it?
Well, it changed everything in the sense of I couldn't walk down any street in Britain without being laughed at by most of the people. Mm. Going in a pub, there was uproar. A comedian only had to say my name to get a laugh. And what that does is it reveals to you the level of immaturity that passes for adulthood in this country, whereby clearly a guy was going through an incredible experience. And instead of being mature and saying, why is this guy gone from being this, what you would call straight, normal television presenter, to how he is now? This is interesting. What's happening here? Instead, and I heard the ripples of laughter 16 years on when my name was mentioned. People just laughed. But the other, which gave me a real insight, especially given what I'm doing now in my books, about how easy it is for the few to control the many. Because the many, you know, we laugh at sheep because sheep just follow the one in front. Oh, stupid sheep. We humans have out-sheeped the sheep because at least the sheep need a sheepdog to keep them in line. Humans keep each other in line, and they do it by ridiculing or condemning anyone who commits the crime, because that's what it's become, of being different. I had a choice, Terry, at that point. I could have ended up faced with that scale of ridicule and ended up shaking in the corner, or I could have said, as I did, laugh. Condemn. I don't give a damn. This is me. And if you don't like me, well, that's bad news, because this is the only me there is. And I refuse to conform and be bowed by the ridicule. And what it does, Terry, when you step out of the little box of what will other people think? How do I put this in a way that people won't think I'm crazy? You then realize how small a box you've actually been living in.
But you do understand that, and I know you do, that you did make yourself a target because what you were saying was outlandish. It was, by normal standards, outlandish and outrageous, very intense. Just have a look at this. What about eruptions? When may we expect tidal waves, eruptions, earthquakes?
Well, because of the nature of the way the Earth has been treated over a long period of time, a tremendous amount of energy has built up within the Earth that cannot get out. If it doesn't get out, bang. So this is going to be released in a controlled as possible, through earthquakes, through volcanoes and such like. If they don't happen, this is not punishment. If they don't happen, there is no Earth.
You see, you're still obviously bitter about people's rejection of your ideas.
No, absolutely not. What I am is frustrated at watching Orwell's 1984 unfold in front of our eyes by the day while people focus on who shot Phil Mitchell. That is frustrating because my children and your children, thank you, are going to have to live, indeed, in the timescale, so are we, because we're living in it now, when the most basics of freedoms are being taken away. Yeah, and this is happening all over the world, and it's coordinated. Now, if people want to think that that's all happening by accident, please be my guest. I don't give a damn.
But who is
but the evidence? The evidence
it?
Is that it's not. Eh?
If it's controlled, it's not happening by accident. Who is controlling people or trying to control them?
Well, there is a network of families
that you can take back to the ancient world, to places like Babylon, Sumer, which is now Iraq. You can chart them through to Rome, where they were responsible for the Roman Empire and the creation of the Roman Church. God save us from religion, by the way. And then they came up into Europe to become the European aristocracy and royal families. Then through the great empires of Europe, especially the British Empire, but others too, these family bloodlines and the secret society network through which they manipulate themselves into power were exported all over the world. And then when the point came where the European colonial powers appeared to give independence to these countries, that was only on the surface. What actually happened was the family bloodlines and the secret society network through which they manipulate was left out in these former colonies, and they've gone on controlling them ever since. So what you have is a hidden hand where events are manipulated, like 9/11, which not just me, but endless other researchers now around the world have taken apart the official story. It insults the intelligence of a 10-year-old. And you have a hidden hand manipulating events, and the whole goal of it is centralization of power to the point where humans are little more than controlled clones.
Who is the hidden hand? I mean, who are these hidden hands?
This network of families I'm talking about. You find that people that are in positions of apparent power, like prime ministers and presidents, are actually puppets of the real power, which doesn't put itself on public display. Why would it? I mean, does anyone really think that George W. Bush is running America? He probably couldn't tie his shoelaces, never mind run a country. let me tell you this. Tell me about the project for the new American century. Tell me about it.
I know nothing about it.
Exactly. Well, let me tell you then something that you should know about. And this is written down. In the 1990s, an organization was created in America called the Project for the New American Century. The people who created it were the people that have run the Bush administration from the moment it came to power. In the year 2000, in September, the Project for the New American Century produced a report, a document, calling for a series of conquests of countries, one of which was Iraq. It actually says in the document, was the effect of we must use the excuse of Saddam Hussein to go into Iraq.
Well, look, can I interrupt?
No, hold a second.
No. Honestly, you see this.
See, but this is the thing, Terry. You see.
No, but honestly,
you say to me,
America is an open society, isn't it?
Oh, please!
It's not an open society.
I've got some seafront property in Birmingham, Terry. You might like to buy, mate. Honestly, please. And they say I'm crazy and weird. America is an open society. My God.
Well, I thought in my innocence that most Americans would know what was going on in America.
Oh, God.
But it's all, you know it all.
Now, you talked about cheap jibes. That's a cheap jibe.
No,
I'm not claiming I know it all. I'm saying that I've been to 40 countries. I've spent enormous amount of time in America talking to people who do know what's going on. Victims of what's going on, and I'm passing this over to people. Now,
you see how preposterous it is?
What, the fact that you think America's an open society?
No.
Absolutely ludicrous, Terry. I've never heard anything so stupid in your life.
Okay. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. David Icke, thank you. Good luck with your mission.
Pleasure. Thank you.
So join me after the break. And I'll be chatting to Ulrika Johnson about life in the tabloids. You'd be mad to miss it.
Right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Well, that was an interesting little clip from David Icke. he was on this British Broadcasting Network, some program called Wogan. And he was just about to let the cat out of the bag regarding PNAC, Project for a New American Century. And, of course, Wogan ran right all over him. And I don't know what Icky was going to say, but I'll bet you $5 he wasn't going to say anything about Jews. What do you think, huh? And the fact that Jews wrote that document he was getting ready to talk about, that document no one talks about, it's called Clean Break. And in that document, it calls for America to invade Iraq, Syria, and Iran to secure the realm for Israel. And this was written by Richard Pearl and Company with Benjamin Netanyahu, who actually paid for the whole project, document, the founding document of PNAC, known as Clean Break. Now, the 9-1-1 conspiracy theorists like to mention the other document that they put out entitled RAD. But RAD was a later document where Dick Cheney makes the remark that we need something like a new Pearl Harbor to get American support for this Middle East invasion. Something of that nature. So they used that remark to show that it was Dick Cheney and George Bush who were really behind the 9-1-1 terror attacks, not the Jews. But in reality, the Jews are the ones that started PNAC. They were the leaders, the intelligentsia, they created the organization. They brought in people like George Bush and Cheney because they're Gentiles and they're beards. And this is, again, a technique developed by Edward Bernays to create a Gentile front group to work within, to further the agenda of controlling the masses, as envisioned by his uncle Freud. So, but you'll never get one of these clowns to just come out and say it. And here's Icky saying how immature people are because they won't just come out and just, who cares what people think? I'm just going to say it. I'm just going to say what I think. Who cares what people think? They're so immature. And yet, Icky won't say it. Icky will tell you it's some ancient bloodline that goes all the way back to ancient Sumeria. Or it's reptiles. He won't say Jews. But that's who it is. Absolutely, that's who it is. Because they've told us in their writings. Freud came out and said it himself. He wanted to destroy Christendom. He fancied himself as a modern-day Hannibal, the Semite who tried to conquer Rome. Those are Freud's words, not mine. And he used his nephew, Eddie Bernays, in the States to take his theories, make them popular, make them part of the popular consciousness of America and the West. The rest is history. Feminism, homosexuality, world wars, drug use, obesity, the destruction of the American family. This is what Eddie Bernays did. This is the house Eddie Bernays built using his uncle's theories. And these are Jews. So I'm telling you exactly who did this. I'm not telling you it's some ancient family, some secret group I'm telling you who this is. I'm giving you names. I'm showing you where the bodies are buried. Oh, yes, Freud did start a secret society to further his work once he was gone. They even had a ceremony where they exchanged rings. And on the rings were was the image of Zeus. And they were Jewish down to a man. And their goal was to continue the work of Freud once he was gone. This is in the public record. This is a fact. But yet these other researchers who probably know all of these things won't tell you that. And they'll make you think you're stupid because you don't believe in their cockamamie ideas. You don't believe in this ancient Sumerian bloodline that's we can trace all the way back and all the way forwards and backwards and forwards. And to this day, the rulers of the world are related to that Sumerian bloodline or a group of rich white guys that belong to a Germanic death cult. That's another popular theme. But we're all too stupid to understand that. It couldn't be something as simple as Jews. We know that's just what people say when they don't have an answer. Or is it? The fact that these people who call themselves scholars don't even investigate the available information and facts and would rather promote theories that a 10-year-old could concoct who was a big fan of Rod Serling. And they call themselves scholars, huh? Well, I've got a name for them. I call them patriotards.
Hurrah, hurrah, the country's rising. Henry Clay and Frelinghuysen. Tippecanoe and Tyler, too. With Tippecanoe and Tyler, too. And Buren.
Security. While the unresolved conflict with Iraq provides the immediate justification, the need for a substantial American force presence in the Gulf transcends the issue of the regime of Saddam Hussein. So the immediate justification to go into the Middle East and start this going is Saddam Hussein and Iraq. This is before they even came to power. It calls for a blueprint for maintaining global U.S. preeminence and shaping the international security order in line with America's principles and interests. This American grand strategy, it said, must be advanced as far into the future as possible, and the U.S. must fight and decisively win multiple simultaneous major theater wars as a core mission. That's what they're planning to do. In September 2000, it calls the American Armed Forces the cavalry on the new American frontier. And it says that key allies like the United Kingdom are the most effective and efficient means of exercising American global leadership. Exactly what they've done since they came to power. Use Britain and Blair to do that. It says that peacekeeping missions demand American political leadership rather than that of the United Nations. Precisely what they've done. And, hey, we have the axis of evil. It highlights North Korea, Syria, Iran, and Libya as dangerous regimes and says their existence justifies the creation of a worldwide command and control system, World Army. The very nations that have been mentioned since. The Axis of Evil speech and that phrase was written for Bush by David Froom of the American Enterprise Institute. Same organization. It also says it spotlights China for regime change. Says it's time for the presence of American forces in Southeast Asia. This could lead to American and allied power providing the spur to the process of democratization in China. Can you imagine what that would mean? And what did Paul Wolfowitz announce this week? More troops going into Asia, American troops. What else does it say? Because what it says is what they're planning to do. It calls for the creation of U.S. space forces to dominate space and total control of cyberspace to prevent their enemies, i.e. anyone that's challenging the agenda, using the Internet. It talks of developing biological weapons that can target specific genotypes, This may transform biological warfare from the realm of terror to a politically useful tool. It said that this project, this blueprint of conquest, would necessarily be slow to unfold unless America had a new Pearl Harbor. In its words, their process of transformation is likely to be a long one, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. This crowd who wrote that came to power, they're in the Pentagon and the government now, in January, officially, 2001. By September, what had happened? What George Bush called at the time our Pearl Harbor. The force behind the war on terrorism was the force that created the justification for it. The Fourth Reich is not coming, it's here.
Boy, you know what I mean? It just doesn't stop. You know, I tell you, I'd like to debate these guys. It's never going to happen, but I'd love to debate them. I could destroy these guys in 5 minutes. Their arguments are so infantile, so preposterous. I could even train you out there in the audience to debate these people and destroy their argument literally in 5 minutes. Make them a laughingstock and show that they're liars, because that's what they are. They're complete buffoons, mental midgets, and liars.
Over. Hurrah, hurrah, the country's rising. Henry Clay and Frelinghuysen. Tippecanoe and Tyler too, with Tippecanoe and Tyler too. Van Buren.
Just about the way I feel about it. That's my Patriotard song for you folks. Here's a guy that's on the stage making a lot of money for public appearances. And he goes through this litany of things that he was reading from Clean Break and, of course, RAD, the other document. Something, I think it's called, the acronym is short for, realigning America's defenses or revamping America's defenses or something of that nature. But I have one question. What do a bunch of Jews with dual citizenship to Israel that were hired by Benjamin Netanyahu for the state of Israel to write this document known as Clean Break, what do they know about what's good for America? We're supposed to believe that Jews working for Israel, which is exactly what they were doing. This is not hyperbole. This is exactly what these people were doing. What do they know about the interests of Americans? What do they know about it? Because they live here, they're not Americans. At least not with their actions. They're Israelis. They're Jews. They're doing what's best for their people and their country. But yet, they write a document that claims to have America's self-interest, that claims to be a document outlining the goals for a new American century, where we're the dominant force in the world, and we do all these wonderful things to bring democracy worldwide. But it was written by Jews for the state of Israel on their behalf, and even co-authored with Benjamin Netanyahu. Oh, yes. But yet, Mr. Icky doesn't mention it. Oh, I know his name's Ike, but I think it's better to call him Icky. Ike is my dog's name. And I don't want to insult my dog. He's a big, big St. Bernard. So I don't want to insult my dog, Ike. We'll just call David Icky, Icky. How about that, huh? So Icky is telling people in the audience all these plans, and he's very accurate. Oh, they're going to have the new Pearl Harbor. They're going to invade Iraq, Syria, Iran. They're going to do this, that, and the other, and it's all accurate. And they're going, oh, my God, he knows. He's a prophet. He knows these things. What they fail to understand, this is in the public record. He's reading documents in the public record, but he's not revealing the authorship. He's not letting you know the people who put this together. Every single one a Jew. Every single one working for the state of Israel. But this completely eludes the presentation. This is completely absent from his speech or his monologue or whatever he calls it. Now, you do the math on this one. Do you think that's an important facet of this dilemma? Do you think that it's important to reveal the authors of these documents? Do you think it's important to reveal their affiliations, who they work for, their citizenship, who paid them to make, to create these documents? Is this not important? This is not important. Obviously it is. Because then you learn the true intent of the document when you know the authors and who paid them. If the Ford Foundation had paid for this document, don't you think David Icky and Alex Jones and the rest of the so-called scholars, don't you think they would be talking about it? They'd be saying the Ford Foundation's document, clean break. Or they'd be saying the Rockefeller Foundation's document, rad. Or they'd be saying the American Nazi Party's document, clean break. They'd be mentioning it in every sentence. They would be driving that point home over and over again, just like what David Icky's driving home. He reads to the audience this, all of these little pearls of wisdom, all of these little nuggets found in clean break. And then the punchline, oh, it's just the Fourth Reich. It's here again. The Nazis are up to their dirty work again. It's those evil white people once again. And this is the house that Bernays built out of the Holocaust. Came collective German guilt. Out of collective German guilt came collective white guilt. The two became synonymous. And this is the tool that is being used to prevent the one group of people on the earth that could actually change this tyranny, could keep it from, keep it at bay. And that is the white race. They're the only race of people that have shown the ability to effectively fight tyranny. And yet, we're the bad guys. We're the bad guys. That's what they're saying. When they say it's fascism, when they say it's the Nazis, they're saying it's the white race. Because of Bernays and his little construct, the myth of the Holocaust, you have white guilt now and collective German guilt, one and the same. So any white group that gets together, even a play ping pong, is considered racist, fascist, Nazi. Any white group, I don't care what you're getting together to do, start a hunting club, and you'll be called fascist, racist, Nazis. and what the 911 truth movement is doing and why they are so popular and why they're getting airplay and media exposures, because they are promoting that tool of world Zionism, collective white guilt. And they are using it effectively to make us ashamed of our leaders, to make us ashamed of our history, to make us ashamed of our mythology, of our language, of our education system, to the point that we have nothing left. No culture, no race, no civilization. And then they talk about these biological weapons that will attack certain groups of certain racial groups. Well, who do you think they're going to attack? If you were the ruler of the world and you wanted to control this world that we live in today, and you were a Jew or non-white, or for that matter, you're a white guy, but you want to control the world, I don't care who you are. You're the king for the day. Who do you control? Who do you want to eliminate from the gene pool? You want to eliminate the group of people that have these crazy ideas about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. These people that will fight to the death to be free men. These are the people you want to eliminate. You don't want to eliminate the slaves. You don't want to eliminate the consumers, the brain dead, the barnyard animals. No, you want to use those people. You need those people because they do what they're told. But you want to get rid of the warrior class, the leadership class. And that, my friends, resides in the white race. So make no mistake about it, there is an attack on our people. Unfortunately, it's a very subtle attack, and we are our own worst enemies. We are participating in our own demise. This is Shank Talk Worldwide. I'm your host, Peter Shank, and I will be right back after a very brief intermission break. This is the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network, Dare to Know. Please don't go away. There is more.
June 11, 1963. Alabama Governor George Wallace takes a symbolic stand against racial integration at the University of Alabama. He blocks a doorway on campus, defying a federal court order allowing two black students to enroll at the school.
I deem it to be my solemn obligation and duty to stand before you, representing the rights and sovereignty of this state and its people.
Wallace backs down after Alabama National Guard troops under federal control are ordered to the campus. Also that same year, in what's then South Vietnam, a Buddhist monk immolates himself in the capital Saigon, now Ho Chi Minh City. It's a protest against South Vietnamese leader Ngo Diem Diem for his crackdown on Buddhists. Diem is killed in a military coup months later. 2001, Oklahoma City bomber Timothy McVeigh is executed by lethal injection at a federal prison in Terre Haute, Indiana. 1919, in New York, Sir Barton wins the Belmont Stakes, the first to win horse racing's Triple Crown. On the same day, 58 years later, Seattle Slough wins the Belmont, the first undefeated racer to capture the Triple Crown. And 1979.
Well, take some advice, Pilgrim. You put that thing up, you'll have to defend it with a gun.
Actor John Wayne, the silver screen legend known as The Duke, dies of cancer in Los Angeles. He was 72. Today in history, June 11th,
Tim McGuire, the Associated Press.
Using what they call a Rule 9 privilege motion today on the floor, roughly 3:30, to offer resolution of question of the privileges of the House, which we will pass out. But basically, it will say that a source from China hacked into the computer of my foreign policy and human rights staff person. Then the computers of my chief of staff, my legislative director, and my judiciary staff person also. On these computers was information about all the casework I've done on behalf of political dissidents and human rights activists around the world. That kind of information, as well as everything else on my office computers, emails, memos, correspondence, district casework, was open to outside eyes.
The use of torture is endemic in China. We know it. I've held 26 hearings, on human rights abuses in China, and have offered a number of resolutions and bills over the years, most of which have been enacted. I say that as the backdrop because in December of 06 and March of 2007, my human rights computers on the subcommittee, it was called Africa Global Human Rights International Operations, were attacked. We asked the people in the House when the virus was put in. They said it was intended to take control of the computers. When they cleaned the computers, they informed us that the attack seemed to come from the People's Republic of China. It had a Chinese IP address, although someone could probably mask that. You know, a reasonable man or woman would say why, given the fact that we had many names of dissidents and others on those computers. So while this may not be top secret type of things, when you have a dissident's name, when you have information concerning his or her whereabouts, what they're doing in China on behalf of human rights, when they go in and through an act of theft, take that information, that is a very, very serious situation.
On the run. They say a man assaulted a woman caretaker who was protecting an elderly patient inside a Fort Lauderdale home. Steve Litz is live from the Fort Lauderdale Police Department with the top story this morning. Steve, good morning.
Bob, good morning. That intense search for the suspect started yesterday, will continue today. The young woman cares for an elderly lady. This young woman was suspicious of a man in the neighborhood. He ended up breaking into a house and raping her. The suspect is described as a black man, 6'1" tall, about 250 pounds, with scabs on his face and four gold upper teeth. Police say he overpowered a 20-year-old woman and raped her at this home in Fort Lauderdale while she was caring for a 90-year-old woman. Sickening, says neighbor Nancy Red Buffalo.
This is a violation, and this is an extremely violent matter of addressing a sexual issue. People are sick. They need help.
Most devastating, most violated crime I think a woman could ever feel. And, you know, I take this personally. I really want him caught.
The crime happened about 10:15 on Sunday morning at the home on the 1100 block of Northeast 3rd Avenue. The women briefly talked with the man in the yard. He then sneaked inside and, armed with a knife, raped the caregiver. Investigators spent hours searching for him on Sunday. They did not find him. Detective Kathy Collins is confident.
When this man is caught, no one should ever breathe a sigh of relief that there's not more out there. It seems like when you catch one, you catch another one, or one pops up. You know, everyone should always be cautious.
The caregiver was raped. The elderly woman was not hurt. The home was burglarized. Police are still looking for that suspect. Again, some distinctive features with the scabs on his face and the four upper gold teeth. Crime Stoppers here in Broward. If you recognize that police sketch, 954-493-TIPS. We're live outside the police department in Fort Lauderdale. Swimming in the deep blue sea.
Just what I've been thinking of.
AP News Minute, a
sandbag levee is still keeping the Cedar River out of downtown Cedar Falls, Iowa, but more rain is falling and officials are asking for extra volunteer sandbaggers. Forecasters say a dry spell could be coming soon. Low humidity and 40-mile-an-hour wind gusts are expected to make things tough for crews battling wildfires in Northern California. A blaze near Sacramento has already destroyed nearly 50 homes and buildings, with another 275 threatened. Officials say the fire is about 60% contained. Gasoline has reached another record. The national average is now $4.05 a gallon. The declining dollar and lower-than-expected oil stocks have pushed crude prices up again in New York. And in Atlanta, a bizarre incident at a gas station. Witnesses say this man pulled in and started dancing naked on top of his car before getting back in, slamming his car into a row of gas pumps, setting them on fire. Fire crews extinguished the blaze before it could spread to more pumps. Diane.
Right, ladies and gentlemen, yes, and we become Africa, don't we? As we descend into barbarism and become wild animals. Oh, the house that Bernays built was such a lovely view. Welcome to Shank Talk Worldwide, where you have a front row seat for the end of history. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, a front row seat as we watch the end of history, as we know it. The end of civilization, because race doesn't matter. All that matters is we're all equal. Oh, boy. And the wildfires in California, we never found out originally last year who set those fires. I heard it was a bunch of illegal aliens. We never heard about it, though, ever again, did we? We never found out who set the fires. We never found out where the E. coli came from in the spinach. We're not going to find out where the salmonella is coming from in the tomatoes or the E. coli that was in the taco meat at Taco Bell, or the tainted cheese, the queso fresco, the crap that Mexicans eat, that crappy goat cheese. Oh yeah, I was infected with tuberculosis, but we never heard any more about that either. Because this is what the Jews do. They only allow stories to see the light of day that cause fear. They want to keep us in a state of fear. So they'll put up stories showing salmonella in the food supply, E. coli in the food supply, but they'll never, ever tell you where it came from, because then you'd be able to come up with a solution. Then you could say, well, I won't ever eat a Taco Bell because they get their workers are all from third world, and they don't wipe themselves after they go to the bathroom, and that's how the E. coli got in the taco meat. No, they won't tell you that. They won't tell you that the illegal aliens are lighting forest fires in California. They won't tell you that tomatoes grown in Mexico are fertilized with human waste. They won't tell you that, because that would upset their other agenda. That is open borders and race doesn't exist. So they'll scare us with these stories, but they'll never give us the solution or the answer or the identity of the culprit. Never. It just fades away. Scare the people and have the story fade away. All right. Well, those of you that didn't hear the interview yesterday with Professor Tom Sunick, I encourage you to download it and listen to it on the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network's website. I enjoyed my interview with Professor Sunick, and I would like to briefly discuss a few of the issues that he raised. He suggested that it was Western man's acceptance of egalitarianism in part that led to the decline of our civilization. I partly agree, but I believe it is the Masonic Judaic interpretation of egalitarianism that has come back to haunt us, not the Christian meaning as found in the Bible. In the Bible, all men are equal in the eyes of God. That is to say, in a spiritual sense, when we go to meet our Maker, God will judge accordingly and make no exceptions for rich, poor, or members of a certain privileged group. However, God makes no judgment of the morality regarding slavery and racial self-interest in the temporal world. If you look at the Ten Commandments, there is nothing in there regarding thou shalt not be racist, because it is a phony concept concocted by Marxists, concocted by Jews, to be specific. Slavery and racial self-interest in the temporal world exists, and everyone has their role to play, no matter what their lot in life, no matter what their race, creed, or color, to coin an overused phrase. All men are equal in the afterlife, not in the here and now. This is a very important distinction, and one that is overlooked entirely by most who bandy this phrase about whenever the topic of race pops up in a conversation. One of the reasons Christianity was revolutionary was the fact that Jesus Christ told people they didn't have to belong to a priestly caste or specific bloodline for God to recognize them in the afterlife. You didn't have to belong to a private club of chosen people to get into heaven and enjoy eternal life. However, no amount of good works or donations to the local charities would get you on the fast track to heaven either. It was faith and faith alone, faith in Jesus as the Lord. Jesus encouraged good works, but he made it clear, no one gets to the Father except through me. This is what infuriated the Pharisees, the ruling class of the Jews in that day. Jesus was upsetting the status quo and putting the power base of the Jews in jeopardy. You know the rest. Jesus was eventually crucified. The Jews were run out of Jerusalem by the Romans, and Rome eventually embraced Christianity as the one true religion and united the white tribes of Europe under Jesus Christ and the Holy Roman Empire. This is the foundation of our civilization. This is our heritage and the religion of our ancestors. Under this system, we created the greatest civilization the world has ever known. In the midst of our advancement as a race and culture, the Jews kept the fires of revenge burning in their people through their religious tracts and occult science known as Kabbalah. Since they were few in numbers, they relied on their cleverness and ability to win the confidence of the host nation in order to infiltrate and disrupt the existing order. They created pseudo-religious organizations and secret societies like Freemasons and Illuminati to use the Gentile population to wreak havoc and undermine the religion and culture of the white race. One of the most effective ways the Jews created division in our civilization was along racial lines. They took the original meaning of the phrase, "All men are equal in the eyes of God," and changed the meaning to, "All men are created equal." And they are not only equal in the eyes of God in the afterlife, they are equal in the here and now. This is Judaism, pure and simple. The Jews teach that heaven can be created here on earth through good works. The Jews do not believe in an afterlife as taught by Jesus Christ. Interestingly enough, neither do the Freemasons. Their idea of immortality is to have a statue built in their image when they die. Much like the communist practice of exhibiting their ex-dictators lying in state for future generations to venerate, the Freemasons that founded this country brought this idea with them. All men are created equal is the main theme of our country's laws. But our founding fathers set down qualifications for the definition of men. Slaves were not men and neither were women. Real men owned property, so only they could vote. If things were to have stayed like this, we wouldn't have the problems we are experiencing today. But the founding fathers put too much faith in the people by inserting the phrase self-evident truths. They did this so the people could change laws or revolt if they chose to do so in the future when it became self-evident that the government wasn't representing the people's best interest. Unfortunately, common sense went out the window years ago, thanks to the work of Freud and Bernays. So self-evident to a heterosexual is not necessarily self-evident to a homosexual. The idea that all men are created equal has morphed into everyone is equal and has a right to equal outcomes in society. It doesn't matter if Joe Blow down the street invents a machine to prolong human life and earn his wealth and status in the community through hard work and creativeness, all men are equal. And it isn't fair that he lives in a bigger house than my family, who has been collecting welfare for three generations. I must be poor because Joe Blow's ancestors exploited me somewhere in the last 500 years. That's the only possible explanation, as all men are equal. Isn't that one of those self-evident truths that we hear about on Oprah? This is one simple phrase that has been the albatross around the neck of our country and people from day one up to now. If we ever get a chance to start a new country in the distant future, we should change the phrase self-evident truths to read immutable, unchangeable truths. The preservation of our race, culture, and family are one of those immutable, unchangeable truths. Forward with intensity, my friends. This is Peter Schenck, and you are listening to Schenck Talk Worldwide, courtesy of the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network. Dare to know. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Welcome back. It is I, Peter Schenck. This is the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network. I'm back. And, well, I want to thank all of you for tuning in today. I want to remind you that we do have some programming coming up next. What is the next show? Let's see if my producer can give me an answer. But I want you to stay tuned because there is another show coming up. And you have been listening to Peter Schenck. My website is shankblog.com. Shankblog.com. And the website for Voice of Reason is vornetwork.com. Vornetwork.com. And I will be back on the air tomorrow. I want to thank you for listening. And stay tuned because Mark Krieger is on later. He will be coming on later tonight, Mr. Mark Krieger. And I will be back on the air live tomorrow. So I want to thank you once again. Please don't forget one important thing. Speak English. Whatever you do, speak English and make sure the people around you speak English. It's our language, and we should be proud of it. All right, my friends, good night, and forward with intensity.
Because Kazakhstan is big, throw transport down the well.
Come on!
So my country can be free, so my country can be free. We must make travel easy, then we have a big party. In my country there is problem, and that problem is the Jew. They take everybody's money, they never give it back.
About what's really going on. You have to project a movie at them in which they will have a version of reality which is the one you want.
There is a conspiracy theory that a shadowy elite of bankers and media moguls are ruling the world from inside a secret room.
They say that the people that control this world could sit around one large table and have lunch.
The theory goes that these elitists plan to create an all-powerful new world order, a world government that will destroy anyone who disobeys them. It is a theory shared by militiamen and neo-Nazis, and in their own way,
then we have a big party. Throw the Jew down the well. So my country can be free.
Potential.